calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. And it's Friday. It's the first hour of our Friday program. Of course, we're on the air here 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, noon to three Eastern time, nine to noon Pacific time, every weekday. And the first hour of our Friday program is always Congressman Bernie Sanders, Brunch with Bernie. Bernie Sanders, I think of Bernie Sanders as America's congressman, although he has just done such a marvelous job for the citizens of Vermont all these years. But he is the only, he is the only independent member of the House of Representatives, the longest serving member of the House of Representatives as an independent in the history of that body, and one of the most honest, plain spoken. When you hear Bernie, you know exactly what he's talking about, and he doesn't mince words and doesn't do the whole shuffle we're so pleased to have him with him. His website, by the way, Bernie.org, if you want to check it out. Bernie.org. Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Tom, it's great to be with you, but you always make me nervous. I can never live up to this introduction that you give me. You get me trembling here.
Bernie, if you...
Who is this guy? Then they hear me and they say, oh.
Bernie, if you saw even one-tenth of the email that I get about you on this program, I mean, it's like... Sometimes I want to answer people. You know, they send me these long emails about how wonderful the Bernie Brunch with Bernie segment is, and I'm thinking, geez, maybe I should just, you know, let Bernie do the show here.
Yeah, maybe we'll have breakfast, lunch, dinner.
Yeah, right, you want to do five? Want to do 3 hours a day, 5 days a week?
500 pounds, and that's it.
There you go. So anyhow, it's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie, what's on your plate? What do you see? Labor Day is coming.
Yeah,
up.
Labor Day is coming up, Tom. And you know, one of the things that I like about your show and what you do is that you continue to focus, among many other issues, on the economic realities facing so many people. And I'm afraid that there are some liberal types, some progressive types, who are concerned about many other legitimate issues, no question about it. But sometimes they lose focus on the fact that there are millions and millions of people who get up in the morning, who go to work, and at the end of the week, after working 40, 50, or 60 hours, in many cases, they may be worse off than when they began. And I think the media does a horrendous job in talking about the reality facing the middle class today, explaining to us, at least trying to expostulate, why it is that so many people are working longer hours for low wages. You know, there was just a census report that came out this week, which really, I think, put the kibosh on Bush's constant claims about how great the economy is. And it pointed out that the real median household income has dropped nearly $1,300 since the beginning of the Bush administration, even with a minor improvement in 2005. So if you stop and you think about all of the increases in technology that we are seeing, the huge increase in worker productivity, here it is. The real median household income has dropped nearly $1,300 since the beginning of the Bush administration. And the reality is, as the Census Bureau also points out, that in order to make ends meet, people have to work longer and longer hours. And as I've mentioned on the show before, but many younger people don't know this, that 30 or 40 years ago, the expectation of the middle class was one person working 40 hours a week. And now we know very few families, middle-class families, where only one person is working. In most cases, it's two people. People work in incredible hours. And at the end of the day, a two-income family today has less disposable income than a one-income family did 30 years ago because of the higher and higher cost of health care, the higher and higher cost of energy, the outrageously high cost of college education or child care and all of that stuff. So people are hurting. And that is the debate that we should have on Labor Day weekend. And every day of this coming year, we should be discussing it. We should be discussing the propriety, the morality of the people on top becoming richer, of the fact that the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider, that under Bush, close to 7 million Americans have lost their health insurance, which only tells us half the story, because a lot of people who have health insurance, but their insurance policies have significantly deteriorated because of higher deductibles. We don't know how many people have lost their pensions, but we know that there are many. We know that many seniors who retired are losing the benefits that were promised to them. We know that we have lost almost 3 million good-paying jobs, manufacturing jobs in the last 5 years. You know, in my small state of Vermont, Vermont is, you know, one of the smallest states in the country, never, ever a major manufacturing center for the United States of America. But even in this small state, we have lost over 20% of our manufacturing jobs in the last 5 years. Our family farms are up against the wall because of very low milk prices and high fuel prices. That's the reality for the middle class today. And if we don't begin to turn these things around, we don't end this trickle-down economic theory of tax breaks for the rich and cuts for everybody else and the outsourcing of good-paying jobs. The truth is, despite Bush's assertions every other day and the Republican Party's assertions, the truth is that our kids will have a lower standard of living than we do. And this is doubly true. This is true for people with college degrees. It is doubly true for people who do not have a college degree, because where 20 years ago, folks with a high school degree can go into a factory, could make, you know, you don't get rich, but you make a living. Today, the option is Walmart's and McDonald's, and you're not going to make very, very much there. So we have got to be talking about these issues, and Labor Day is as good a time as any. We have to be talking about the need to revitalize the American trade union movement in this country so the workers have a seat at the table for collective bargaining. And we have to talk about the need to raise the minimum wage, which, if you can believe it, when Bush and his friends are trying to provide and have provided hundreds and hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks for the top 1%, you know, the last vote that I cast before Congress broke for the August recess was part of this bill to give $800 billion in tax breaks through the repeal of the estate tax to the wealthiest 0.2%, but they won't give us a clean vote on raising the minimum wage, which now nationally is $5.15 an hour. So bottom line here, Tom, is as Labor Day comes, it is important to focus on the needs of the middle class, working class people, lower income people, and see how we create an economy that works for all people and not just for the CEOs of large corporations.
Bernie, I know you've been very outspoken about Alan Greenspan and really held him to task over the years. One of the things that he's done over the last 5 years is drive interest rates down to the point where people's monthly payments on their houses, on a home, have decreased, which has caused people to buy, in many cases, more house than they really could or should be able to afford, which has fueled this housing bubble. There's a lot of concern now that Greenspan got out of the way and Ben Bernanke is bringing things back to at least some semblance of normalcy, that this bubble is going to burst and the middle class is going to get taken down because Greenspan had done this basically to hype the economy to get George Bush and the Republicans elected in 2002 and Bush reelected in 2004. Is anything happening in Congress to try and mitigate what might happen if there is a bad burst of the housing bubble?
Not that I am. I mean, this speaks to the need for Congress to represent the needs of working people, and you know, that doesn't happen terribly much on the Republican leadership. One of the areas that I have worked on, being a member of the Financial Services Committee, deals with not exactly this issue, Tom, but another scandalous situation, which is the fact that credit card companies are charging Americans up to 28% interest rates.
It's another dimension of the same thing. We had negative income last year for
right.
the first time.
I mean, people going incredibly deeply into debt. And you had what we called a bait-and-switch phenomenon where these credit card companies are sending out, you know, zillions, I mean, just incredible numbers of proposals to people. They, you know, they flood our mailboxes, zero interest rate, two interest rates, but it's all a crock because they can raise interest rates for any reason and any time, and they do it, and a lot of people are not aware of it. So, you know, I've talked to people who are paying interest rates of 25-28%.
And it's the people who can least afford it
to
get the highest rates.
Exactly. So people are getting, that's what they're doing every month. They're paying off interest rates, and they're paying off their interest, and they're going nowhere and reducing their principal. But taking a hard look, you know, there was a time in America where usury was illegal.
Right.
But that
usury
is not the,
was defined up until the mid-70s. It's interest
right.
rates over 10%.
That's right. But that is not the case right now.
Yeah, Richard Nixon did away with that. Or really, Congress did. But
well, it was a combination of things.
Yeah.
But it is that's just another issue that we have got to take a hard look at.
There you go. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. We'll be taking your calls right after this break. The toll-free number all across the United States, 866-303-2270. 866-303-2270. The Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank. We'll be right back.
There ain't no relief for this commander-in-chief. He wants his soul to be dirt poor. There ain't no relief from all these corporate thieves as they send your sons and daughters, pollute your air and water, and send your sons and daughters off to fight on their corporate wars.
And welcome back, my friends. Listener-supported radio. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. How do listeners support our radio? By supporting our advertisers. Our program brought to you today in part by Sacred Grounds Coffee, saving the planet one cup at a time. Great roasted organic coffees. 1-800-425-2532. In fact, you could say this program powered right now by Sacred Grounds Coffee. 1-800-425-2532 or sacredgroundscoffee.com. And Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, and www.smalldog.com for all your iPod needs and Macintosh needs, 1-800-511-MAX. We're back with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. And although it sounds like we just lost Bernie, so his call got dropped, so we'll be right back with Bernie in just a second. Oh, just a quick heads up for our listeners in the New York City area. On the 9th of September... And what day of the week is that, David? That is, if I'm looking at my calendar here, it looks like it's Thursday. Is that right? No, it's
Saturday.
Friday. Saturday.
The 9th is Saturday.
The 9th is Saturday. Thank you, David. On the 9th of September, I will be at Box Pop in Brooklyn, New York, signing my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What You Can Do About It, or What We Can Do About It. And so feel free to drop by and say hi and all that sort of thing. It would be great to... Great to have you on there, and great to meet you if you happen to be in the New York area. 1-866-440-8466, our number. And by the way, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room, you can do that by going to tomhartman.com. Just click live chat up at the top of the page. We've got two new pieces up on Common Dreams this week. One about how the Bushies are using the fascism term, and it really should be called Republican fascism. The real fascists are here in the United States, quoting former Vice President of the United States, Henry Wallace, and the other about the odd timing of the whole JonBenet thing. What's the deal with this? What's going on with all this? So as we're waiting to hear back from Bernie, we've got Bernie. So, Bernie, you back with us?
Yep.
Okay, great. Let's just go right to the phone lines in that case then. Tom in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Oh, it's so great to have you on the planet. Just wonderful. Bernie, I'm continually plagued by my right-wing friends asking me what strategy the Democrats have for getting out of Iraq. And I keep asking them, well, which hearing did the Democrats manage? Which hearings in which they received sworn testimony from representatives? Can we actually formulate a plan without knowing where we're going? Do we have to make our decisions based on what we hear on Fox?
Well, for a thought, one of the really unfortunate manifestations of one-party government, one-party Republican government in Washington right now, is that both the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate have been operating more as a rubber stamp for the White House rather than as independent bodies asking hard questions, trying to develop good policy. Generally speaking, what they, both the House and the Senate, have essentially done is laid down, not asked, have the kinds of hearings or investigations, and not raise the issues that make the White House uncomfortable. So to answer your question, one of the immediate benefits of breaking one-party government, which I believe is in fact going to happen next election, is that we can have some serious debate and challenges and questions to what Bush is doing in Iraq and on many other issues as well.
Great. Thank you very much, Bernie, and thank you to that caller for that. I'm going to ask the call screener, Lauren, in New York, to please be putting people up online because my call screening software just crashed. We're using a different than normal computer, and the thing is just badly flaky. Let's go to Leonard in Seattle, Washington, on line four. Hey, Leonard.
Hi there. Bernie and Tom, I think you guys are very important for this country, so keep talking. I've been doing some calling work for Darcy Berner out in Washington State here, and the one of the issues I talk to people when they want to engage me on issues is the estate tax, and I chose that because it's so easy to encapsulate what the issues are. Now, but I've been getting some pushback. I've heard three numbers, 0.2%, 0.25%, and under 1%. And if Bernie could speak to those, where those numbers come from.
I mean, these projections, I don't know that you're going to have 100% accuracy, but my understanding is that the bill that the Republicans brought up on the last day of the session before we broke for August would have provided $800 billion in tax breaks through the almost complete repeal of the estate tax to less than 8,000 families, which is about 0.2% of families in America. So 99.8% of Americans would not have benefited one nickel, but on the other hand, all of us would have assumed that $800 billion is part of a larger national debt that we and our kids would have to pay off. So I think the answer, the information that we have, is that it's about the top 0.2% of benefits, beneficiaries.
And the reality is that the threshold at which the estate tax kicks in is going up over time.
That's correct.
Along with inflation.
And it will not impact family farmers or the vast majority of small businesses.
Yeah, and in fact, by and large, doesn't, never really has.
Right.
We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. 27 minutes past the hour, number 1-866-440-8466-440-THOM. We'll be right back. Welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman radio program. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us for our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the program. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. And Jim in Grand Rapids, Michigan, on listening on WTKG. You're live with Bernie Sanders. Hey, Jim.
Hi, Tom, Bernie. I have a question. When I'm speaking to non-progressives, I have a hard time describing the intentions of the Bush-Cheney policies, like even speaking of specific issues like the Israeli policy or the local economy or any subject, it seems like their intentions might be different. It seems like Bush is pushing a lot more of the religious aspect and then Cheney's pushing a lot more of the business. And I don't know if those are two agendas that are working in one or if it's...
Well, I think, Jim... the first point I think to be made, and I believe this sincerely, is that for the Bush-Cheney people, the goal of their policies is not improving the lives of people, but really power for power's sake alone. They will do almost anything it takes, lie, do whatever it is, in order to win elections and to stay in power. And I think when you talk to ordinary people, the strongest case, I think, that one can be made is to just look at their economic record and to talk to people about the fact that this administration works overtime on behalf of every special interest that you can think of, whether it's the oil companies. Talk to people. Ask them whether they think it is right, fair, moral for companies like ExxonMobil to make last year $36 billion in profits, more profits than any corporation in the world history, paying out their former CEO a $398 million retirement package, while workers all over this country are now paying $2.93 for a gallon of gas. Ask them about outsourcing. The president is on record. His chief economic advisor is on record, is saying that if a company can produce a product cheaper abroad, it makes sense for that company to do that, i.e., throw American workers out on the street and move to China. Ask the people that you know, working people that you know, whether it is a good idea to give corporate welfare to energy companies while the Bush administration cuts back on financial aid for middle-class college families. I think raising those kinds of issues, just ask them. The president of the United States says the economy is doing very well. And the confusion there is the economy is doing well for Bush's millionaire and billionaire friends. Obviously, it is not doing well, as Tom and I discussed earlier this afternoon, for ordinary people. I think that's, you have to talk to people about the world that they live in. And I think most working people you talk to who are anti-progressive or pro-Bush cannot, with a straight face, tell you that the economy is doing well for them. And then we go from there. We ask them why. Is it appropriate that we give tax breaks to billionaires while the number of poor people in America has increased by 5 million since Bush has been around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what I would suggest.
Well said. John in Los Angeles, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. Hi, Tom.
Hey, John.
Tom, yesterday you were talking on the radio regarding Bush appointed, did another appointment to the labor market as far as a Walmart guy that was the union buster.
Yeah, he, a recess appointment.
Right, and you weren't sure how long. You said it was however long it was, and you weren't sure if it ended this January or two more years. And I was thinking, since Congressman Sanders is on the phone, maybe he can tell us how long that guy will last.
John, I'm sorry, I don't know the term.
Good question.
How long that term is?
Oh, okay, Paul, do you know about Paul DeCamp? This just hit the news. The guy who was one of the head lawyers for Walmart, busting unions, made a career doing it. Was just appointed to be the head of the U.S. Labor Department's Wage and Hour Division, which enforces our labor laws, including overtime laws, workplace discrimination laws, and child labor laws.
You know, I mean, this
recess appointment.
This is the umpteenth time that when Bush has the opportunity to make an appointment, you know, there are Republicans out there who live in the real world who are moderate types, who may be conservative, but appointment after appointment, whether it is to environmental agencies, to labor agencies, he continuously goes to the extreme right. And this is a guy who is polarizing this country in an unprecedented way. I mean, it just is mind-boggling. There are a lot of intelligent, moderate, or conservative Republicans out there who could do a good job for Republican administration. But time after time after time, he goes to the extreme right in order to fill these positions. And it really is just an outrage.
David in Virginia, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, Congressman.
How you doing?
Go ahead, David.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you mentioned earlier about income rose slightly last year, but according to the Washington Post, that income was for households with people over 65, and that with income people under 65, income actually went down.
You're
and
right.
Men's wages adjusted for income actually made less than people making like in 1973. And I'll take your answer off here.
No, you're right. You're exactly right. I use the cumulative numbers, but if you exclude senior citizens, the situation is, in fact, even worse.
Probably just Warren Buffett himself is modifying those numbers. I don't know.
The people who have done well are the people at the very, very, very top. They're the people who have made out like bandits. Almost everybody else has done worse, and the lower down you are on the economic totem pole, the worse you have done.
Yeah. Sue in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
You got me?
You are. You're on the air.
Okay. I'm going to try to stay within the Labor Day theme, but one of the things that had happened over the last couple of days is we were fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to receive a census survey. And needless to say, we were very disturbed at some of the questions. Some of them were not relating to what we originally thought.
Are you sure you got a real census survey? Because the census is only done every 10 years and years that ends with zero.
I'm looking at it. It says the American Community Survey, and it's got a stamp up there. It says Department of Commerce, United States of America.
So, okay, that's not the real census. This is some group maybe within the government that's doing a survey, but it's not the Census Bureau.
Oh.
So what are the questions?
Okay, my question was, you know, can I disregard this? Would, you know, my original question was, can we disregard it, throw it away? We felt it was like Big Brother looking over our shoulder. So if we were to throw it away, would we have a problem with that?
Bernie, you know about this?
Sue, I am sorry. I'm just not familiar with the document that you're looking at. I would give your local congressperson a ring and get some advice there.
Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Sue,
I'm just not familiar with that. We have not gotten any calls in my office on that.
Yeah, you wonder sometimes, you know, what these guys are up to. But the census is every year that ends with a zero. It's every 10 years, the official census, if I'm recalling the Constitution correctly. Isn't that, yeah?
Yeah, I think that is correct. But sometimes what the government does is try to get demographic information and so
they'll
forth.
They'll do a poll of some kind, yeah. Dave in Los Angeles, California, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. A real honor to talk to you.
Hey,
and
Dave.
You too, Tom.
Thank you.
I, too, have a question on these recess appointments. I see we had three of them yesterday, most notable Paul DeCamp, as Tom's brought up. We also have a Michael Duffy and a Daniel Mernon. These were to the Federal Mine and Safety and to the Department on Health and Human Services. Is there anything that we can do about – I know it's within the law, one of the few things that Bush has done within the Constitution, but – This just truly disgusts me. I looked at Paul DeCamp's bio on his legal firm's website, and the rulings and the pieces of the amicus briefings and things that he's written just are completely against the working person. This just totally undermines the American people's will by doing these research.
Right. I mean, I'm not sure what can be done, but certainly one approach is for the Democratic leadership to say if the president continues to do that, they are going to really delay other appointments. I mean, and just sit down and negotiate with them and say this is just basically unfair to take advantage of the fact that people are in recess and push this stuff through is wrong. And if you continue to do this, we are going to do A, B, and C.
Yeah, although without having the ability to, without the Democrats having control of the House or the Senate, not only do they not have the ability to hold hearings and subpoena people, but it's also sometimes difficult for them to even get in front of a camera.
Yeah, but there are things that one can do. They do have more than 40 votes.
Yeah.
And there are things that one can do in the Senate to slow down the process and say, listen, we are not going to cooperate with you if you're not cooperating with us and if you're taking advantage of recesses to make these appointments. So I think, you know, the Democrats do have a negotiating hand to play, and I think they should play it.
And they need to stand up in the Senate. All the more reason to send good people to the United States Senate.
I concur with that.
And on that point, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's 45 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie.org is Bernie's website. If you want to check it out, there's news and information there about Bernie and what he's up to these days. TomHartman.com, of course, for our live chat room and for information about this program. Our telephone number, 866-440-8466. It's 45 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Dreaming of a bright and sparkling future of a returned democracy to the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, Bernie.org, his website. Our telephone number, 866-440. Sometimes I was filling in for Randy yesterday, and I still have her phone number stuck in my brain. Sorry about that. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number, right here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Jerry in Dallas, Texas, you're live with Bernie Sanders. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, I am wondering about this toll road that they are talking about from Canada to Mexico. I understand there's quite a few people that are not for this, and the government is telling us, oh, yes, you're going to have it anyway.
You're talking about NAFTA superhighway thing?
Yes. There's also rumblings down here in regards to this that there has been some kind of agreement that there may be a North American alliance, kind of like what's happened in Europe. Do you know anything about this?
Well, the NAFTA is a North American Free Trade Agreement, and that is an alliance. I think this idea of a toll road is a very bad idea. I think what NAFTA has shown us so far is that it has been a disaster for American workers, and it has been a disaster for the vast majority of the people in Mexico as well. Poverty in Mexico is increasing. You know, one of the things, Tom, that I remember very well from that NAFTA debate, having been actively involved in it, is that a lot of the pro-NAFTA people got on the floor of the House and they said, if we pass NAFTA, man, it's going to stop illegal immigration. That was, 10, 11 years ago?
Yeah.
And we all know the result of that. So,
surprise,
you know, the bottom line, all of these trade agreements, to my mind, have worked against American workers because corporate America, obviously, will make their investments and hire people when you can pay them $1 an hour or $2 an hour, rather than 10 or 15 bucks an hour. And that is, in fact, what is happening. That is why we are losing millions of good-paying jobs, and that is why the middle class in America is – it's one of the reasons why the middle class in America is in decline.
Okay, thank you. Celine in Seattle has some information on the Census Bureau. Hey, Celine.
Yeah. My closest friend for a number of years has worked for the Census, and you have a misunderstanding about the Census. They work year-round all the time on all sorts of things. One of the really important things that they came out with about 6 months after the election was that there were actually 3 million more votes that they got from their census work than were added into the original vote total.
In 2004. But if you got a letter from the Census Bureau, wouldn't it say Census Bureau on this outside
they
his return address?
They tell you that they're going to come interview you.
I see.
And then they show up, and then they will follow up for 3 and 4 years, sometimes 10 years.
I see. But if somebody got
such things like your grocery receipts and
right, but this
that
woman got a letter from some other government agency that was a questionnaire. So that might not have been the Census Bureau. Right?
Well, I just wanted to let you know that the Census Bureau is not a once every 10-year thing.
Okay. Thank you, Celine.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Celine. I'm just not quite sure why the Census Bureau would be knowing how many people voted. That seems to me a little bit outside of their jurisdiction.
Yeah.
It's
interesting.
Get that
one. I remember when that news story came out, I never did understand what was going on with it.
But what the Census Bureau does do, I think what Celine is right, is obviously it functions more than once every 10 years. And what they do try to do is get information about who we are as a people.
Yeah, indeed.
That kind of information.
Bill in Sacramento, California. Hey, Bill.
Hi. How you doing, Tom? And good morning, Congressman.
Good morning, Bill.
I'm very concerned about the undermining of the congressional powers as well as our constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, are you aware of and how does Congress intend to combat these things? A couple of examples on the changing the laws. They're making executive orders in the background that, like 133.03, for instance, creates a corporation called Iraq Inc. and it absolves any occupying person that represents America of any criminal or international prosecution. On the domestic front, they're doing things like changing policies. One of them is called condition of significance. They tried to use it in Katrina, where they would have the right to create emergency martial law, but the governor, by not giving up her rights to control the National Guard, prevented that from happening. And so they're selling out American industry and undermining our laws, and they're doing it in a way that usurps congressional power. And I was under the understanding that Congress is the only one that can go in and declare some of these executive orders as unconstitutional.
Well, the Congress can't declare them unconstitutional. Congress can revoke them. Congress has the power to do anything it has the political desire to do. Unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, so long as you have a one-party government, and so long as you have that U.S. House and U.S. Senate operating more as a rubber stamp for the White House rather than as independent bodies protecting the interest of the American people and our Constitution, I'm afraid that not much is going to change. But Bill's point is a very, very important point. We have a president who believes in the concept of an imperial presidency, that he pretty much has the right to do whatever he wants to do in any area that he wants. And he sees the Congress as somewhat irrelevant, and in fact, the courts as somewhat irrelevant. Needless to say, I think that that is a very dangerous situation for those of us who believe in a vibrant democracy, and it is a horrendous precedent for the future of this country. And this is a huge issue, and it's one of the reasons why we have to end one-party government this November.
Amen. Amen. Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie.org is website. You can learn more about him, more about Bernie and what he's up to these days. Please check it out, Bernie.org. Bernie, thanks so much for being
here. Good
to
be with you, Tom.
Great talking with you, as always. Coming up next, President Bush and Islamo-mush. Over at Think Progress is suggesting the best case is that President Bush's speech in Utah was a cynical manipulation of the American public. Was it cynical or is he deluded? We'll be discussing that and more when we come back from this break, 57 minutes past the hour.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Exposes political corruption and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's Friday, the 1st of September, and pretty much anything you want to talk about. There's a couple of folks have been calling in about the American Community Survey, and hang on the line. I want to take your calls. I'd like to learn more about this, and thank you for that. David Sirota is writing today about how the GOP bankruptcy vote is coming back to crush U.S. troops. This, I think, is a huge issue. Back in 2005, when these guys were pushing the so-called bankruptcy reform, Dick Durbin offered an amendment. Senator Dick Durbin offered an amendment saying that the existing protection, bankruptcy protections, before they got stripped away from us in the so-called Bankruptcy Reform Act of 2005, that those existing protections should at least protect the troops serving in Iraq, especially like National Guardsmen who don't have quite the safety net that full-service active duty members do. 38 of his Senate colleagues agreed with him, but, he needed 50. Or 51, arguably, and so it lost. Voting against the amendment, by the way, Conrad Burns, Republican from Montana, Mike DeWine, the Republican from Ohio, George Felix Allen, the Republican from and notorious racist from Virginia, Rick Santorum, the Republican from Pennsylvania, Jim Talent, the senator from Republican senator from Missouri. And even Lincoln Chafee, the so-called moderate from Rhode Island, they all voted against this. And these are all, by the way, Republicans who are up for re-election right now. And today you can read in USA Today from a new Pentagon report, and I quote, "As many as one in five members of the armed services are being preyed on by loan centers set up near military bases that can charge cash-strapped military families interest rates of 400% or more." End of quote. This is legal war profiteering. It should not be legal. It should not be happening. And these guys who voted to strip these young men and women who are serving of bankruptcy protection in the event that Bush's bankrupt policies caused them to come back to no job, no income, and an economic crisis. Conrad Burns, Mike DeWine, George Allen, Lincoln Chafee, Rick Santorum, Jim Talent. These guys, there has to be a special place in hell. I'm just telling you, the destruction of the American middle class is becoming so comprehensive, so complete, so right across the board. And we have a bought and paid for House and Senate, in particular the Republican Party. I mean, they've always been the party of big business, or at least since the 1870s, and now it goes way beyond that. I don't think that there has ever been as corrupt a Congress as there is today. Even Congress under Ulysses S. Grant, who himself, the Republican His own Republican Party refused to run him for re-election for the third term that he wanted because he and his cronies were so corrupt. Richard Nixon was a saint compared to George Bush in this administration. Not a single investigation into any of this, nothing being done about any of it. It's incredible. 1-866-440-8466. David in Philadelphia, you can enlighten us about this American Community Survey?
Well, I can give you a little bit of information. I work for a nonprofit that helps families get out of poverty in Pennsylvania. And we use American Community Survey data to kind of, you know, market our organization a little bit. And what it is it is a census survey. And I don't know why it's branded the way it is. I don't know why they don't use the census brand in, you know, in connection with the survey. But it gives on a smaller scale, it gives information about population, income, economic statistics about smaller geographical areas. And it's part survey data, it's part regression data, things like that that they figure, you know, based on projections and stuff like that. But it's released every year. And in fact, the most recent information was just released this week. And it is a census questionnaire that lady received. And, you know, for my sake and the sake of other organizations that use that data, I hope that she fills it out and returns it.
Okay.
So.
You know, my suspicion of this whole thing goes back to when I got my $300 check. You'll recall back when in 2001 or 2002, Bush was running around saying, oh, we got this big surplus that Bill Clinton ran up, this tax surplus, and let's give it back to the people. And his original proposal was to cut the taxes on millionaires and billionaires. And Bernie Sanders came along, and Bernie Sanders came along and he said, how about cutting the taxes on everybody? Why don't we just write a $300 check? You want to stimulate the economy? The economy's going south here after 9/11 and after the first year of Bushonomics. You want to stimulate the economy? Put money into the hands of people who are going to spend it. Why don't we just send a check for $300 to everybody in America? And that way, if you want to give back some money, you can do it. It'll be a short-term stimulus. It won't have long-term damage to the budget like a permanent tax cut would, or even a long-term tax cut would. And people, you know, it'll be very popular. People will like that. And give the $300 to the billionaires, you know, it won't be as meaningful to them. Give it to them and give it to the average working people as well. Give it to everybody. And so Bush, basically the pressure got so great that Bush had to incorporate Bernie's $300 for everybody into and along with his trillion-dollar tax cut for millionaires and billionaires. And so when I got my $300 check, along with it was a letter from the Internal Revenue Service saying President Bush has, you know, words to the effect of, I don't have the letter here any longer, and I don't remember the exact language, but it was words to the effect of praising Bush. You know, President Bush has made sure that your needs are being taken care of, and blah, 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 and here's your $300, you know. And it was just a pathetically transparent campaign thing. And then I think back to the push polls where Bush was, you know, going up against the Senator John McCain from Arizona in South Carolina, where the Republican Party was calling people saying, if you knew that John McCain was getting psychiatric treatment for his war trauma, would you still vote? And he wasn't. And if you knew that John McCain had an out-of-wedlock child with an African-American woman, will you vote? And he didn't. He and his wife adopted a young girl from Bangladesh who has darker skin. But, you know, it's got nothing to – and this push poll was, like, promoting these lies. And so it just made me very suspicious of anything coming out of this government as long as the Bush administration and the Republicans are running it.
Yeah, I can understand. I can tell you just in a snapshot from the information I looked at the other day that the poverty for the first time in 4 years did not increase, but it didn't go down at all either. So,
right.
And, you know, and the people that are getting hit the hardest are single mothers.
Right.
In America.
So it's these surveys that are providing that information. So,
yeah.
So my skepticism is misplaced. David, thank you very much for setting me straight. I appreciate it. George in Las Vegas, you had some thoughts on this as well?
Yep. Oh,
go
yeah.
For
am
it.
I on?
Yeah, you are.
Okay. Yeah. The I don't think it's – I think your suspicions are well-founded because they begin using this survey and they send it out to a million people a year. And it's a 24-page long, 72-question survey that asks you everything, including how much you earn, what your home is worth, details of your health, when you leave for work, previous addresses, pregnancies, monies received from the government, and on and on. And they demand you answer because you can be fined $1,000 for each question you don't answer. Nobody's – it hasn't happened to anybody yet, you know, the fine thing. but
right.
It's at, you can download it at www.census.gov/ACS/www/.
Hmm. Interesting. And why all the intrusive questions? I mean,
that's what I'm wondering, you know.
Yeah. Our last caller just suggested that it's so that they can actually get useful information to determine where there is need.
Yeah, well, Congressman Ron Paul questions the American Community Service both ludicrous and insulting.
Yeah, Ron Paul is probably the most conservative member of Congress. He's essentially a libertarian, not even a Republican, although he is Republican attached to his name. And I have to say I have a lot of respect for Ron Paul.
Yeah, well, he says it's none of government's business.
Yeah.
The survey.
Yeah. Well, on the other hand, though, how do we collectively as a society, George, come up with things like where are we going to send money to help schools that are failing, or where are we going, you know, what parts of the country are we going to target to try and remediate poverty, or, you know, I mean, just it's...
Oh, sure. No, I mean, and
I mean, we've got to figure this stuff out somehow.
I mean, I worked on, you know, updates. I once updated the Las Vegas urban plan
mm-hmm.
in 76 mm-hmm. because they do that. They do every 5 years. They do updates on the census.
Right.
But this is asking for information that, I mean, if this government weren't so secretive, I would, you know, okay, that's fine. I don't mind them knowing all this stuff. But knowing about your health and knowing
mm-hmm.
about... you know, all 72 things, all these things they want to know about you. I mean, I'm a bit suspicious about it because
yeah.
it can be given to the IRS.
Yeah, you wonder if this is a database that is being
right.
handed off to John Negroponte, you know.
Exactly.
Good old
exactly.
Death Squad John gets this info. What's he going to do with it? Spooky. Okay, so we've got two different points of view on this. George, thank you for the call. Interesting. This is the New American Survey. If you have some thoughts on that or any more information, frankly, I have to admit, I'm just learning about this myself. 866-440-8466, 16 minutes past the hour.
All right, Republicans, line up for duty. Where are you going? Hey!
Hey, where are you going? Hey!
Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks. Chicken hawks. Carl Rove, he didn't serve. Dick Cheney. Tom DeLay, he didn't serve. And George Bush was AWOL. Chicken hawks.
I know the chicken hawks, they just want another war so bad. So bad. It's all about them Islamo-fascists, you understand. Forget the fact that fascism is the merging of state and business enterprises. No. Those Muslims, don't you know our God's bigger than their God? Just ask General Boykin. He's still out there talking about it. Not only was he not punished by the Bush administration, he's been promoted. And Bush, you know, there's two possibilities here. And with regard to Bush saying things like, there's a single movement, a worldwide network of radicals. And that's why he had to attack Saddam Hussein after... We were, at least theoretically, probably, but, you know, if, obviously, in my mind anyway, the case is still not closed. But let's say, for the sake of argument, we were attacked by Osama bin Laden. So, therefore, we attacked Saddam Hussein, who was a secularist, who would not allow the religious people to have control of his government, who wouldn't allow them to force women into burqas, who allowed women to go to school, to run businesses, to be physicians. It was probably Lebanon and Iraq were probably the two most secular Muslim countries or majority Muslim countries in the entire Middle East. Bush, I'm just astounded. Jerry in Seattle. Hey, Jerry, your wife works for the Census Bureau?
Yeah, she does.
Okay.
Been there for about 15 years now.
So what's going on with all this?
Well, I don't know about the specific survey that you're talking about, but I do have just some basic information about what the Census Bureau is and kind of what they do.
Okay.
And basically what they are is they are the data gathering arm of the U.S. government.
Right. Their existence essentially was mandated by the Constitution, which requires that every 10 years there'll be a survey to redefine congressional boundaries so that representation in the House of Representatives
is
always relatively proportionately equal.
Yeah, that's correct. But that's not all they do. Just about every statistic that you see that comes out of government in Washington, D.C., the Consumer Price Index, crime statistics, housing starts, all of that information generally is collected by the U.S. Census Bureau. And then that raw information is sent back to Washington, D.C., to the appropriate organizations, such as the Department of Labor or the FBI or whoever.
Right.
And they compile and manipulate the numbers to get what they want.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Jerry, thank you very much for the information.
Sure.
Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Peter, a truck driver going through Vermont. Hey, Peter, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was pleasantly surprised to hear Bernie on the radio. I see what's going on in Bernie's campaign right now with Rich Tarrant, with the half-truths and the Karl-Rove-type tactics in the newspapers and the paid political ads. And I'm still feeling sick from what happened with John Kerry in the last presidential election from the Karl-Rove machine. And
yeah,
I want to know
Bernie has, just for the record, Bernie has what I think is the richest guy in the entire state of Vermont running against him, basically trying to buy a seat and doing it with what are being described by, well, as you described, Peter, described by many as to be charitable, deceitful advertising techniques.
Yeah, and he's passing himself off as a centrist and not a right-wing extremist, et cetera, et cetera. But on a grander scale, I just wanted to ask, Ben, I'm happy to hear your opinion. I love your show, by the way.
Thank you.
I came across you by way of stumbling on Stephanie Miller one morning and fell in love with her and got hooked on the Talk Left channel just by accident. You guys you're right up my alley.
Great, thank you.
What can the Democrats do with the upcoming elections now and again in the next presidential election to fight off this this campaign, this methodology of these guys? They're assassins.
Yeah, well, we need to be outing it. We need to be talking about it. We need to be publicizing it. We need to be galvanizing people into action. We need to be watching what's going on at the polls. We need to be, you know, pushing legislation that would depoliticize the Secretary of State's offices nationwide. We need to get the private corporations out of the voting machine business. All of that, though, is stuff that we can't do in the next 65 days, and we've got an election coming up. So for right now, what we have to focus on is, number one, keeping an eye on the election places and looking for dirty tricks, that at least the more obvious ones that can be spotted. And number two, get as many people as possible to vote. This is a midterm election, and typically midterm elections, so many midterm elections are decided with 20% or 30% of the voters turning out. I mean, very, very low percentages. This needs to be a midterm election where there's 40%, 50%, 60%, 70%, 80% turnout. I mean, we need to be driving people to the polls, Peter. And that's it. I mean, show up at your local, whatever county you're in, go to the county Democratic headquarters and say, you know, how can I help? You know, is it writing a $10 check, or is it volunteering? Is it making phone calls? Is it call? You know, how can I help? And work with a local campaign. I mean, if you're there in Vermont, go to Bernie.org and see what you can do there. Volunteer to help. Go door to door. Peter, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate your kind words. We've got to wrap it up here. 27 minutes past the hour.
We were so happy when they passed NAFTA. We moved all our factories just across the border. We used to pay good wages. Now we don't have to. Maquiladora. We'll pay you $50 for a 100-hour week. We'll bribe the inspectors so they can ignore you. You can't use the toilet and you're not allowed to speak. Maquiladora. The taxes in the states were sort of steep. The worker safety laws can really bore ya. Now we're turning out our products on the cheap at the maquiladora.
Dance break!
Right, left, stop, freeze, frisk, cup, cup, laugh, laugh, laugh.
And welcome back. It's 871 days, 11 hours, 24 minutes, 9 seconds before the Constitution mandates that George W. Bush must leave office. Although, frankly, if you look at the high crimes, misdemeanors, and treasonous acts he's committed in office, I'd say he should be out now, but that would require impeachment in the House and conviction in the Senate, and that ain't going to happen unless enough of us get active, get mobilized, and get out there to elect Democrats to the House and Senate this fall. This is probably the last election. Those of you who have listened to me for years, for the 4 years we've been doing this program, or read my writings over the years, you know I am not one prone to exaggeration beyond the occasional joke or theater or whatever. But I mean this just dead serious. These guys are willing to subvert the Constitution. They not just willing, gleeful. Not just gleeful. They brag. It's the terror surveillance program. We don't need no stinking judges. They are willing to subvert the Constitution. They are willing to convert the public commons into private gain. They are willing to literally kill people, watch people die, proactively take steps that cause the death of over 100,000 people in order to gain political advantage, just pure, simple political advantage. They clearly are willing to go all the way to the Supreme Court to block the vote from being counted. We saw that happen in 2000. They're willing to steal and rig elections. We saw that happen in Ohio and several other states in 2004. This may be the last opportunity that we have. Now, that doesn't mean on November 8th, 2006, that if the Democrats have not taken control of the House and Senate, I'm going to go away. I'm going to stay here and keep, well, as long as we're, radio stations will have us, I'm going to stay here and keep talking about these issues and continue talking about these. But, regardless of who wins, I am so concerned that if at least one branch of government is not taken by the Democrats this year, so that the Republicans can continue to prevent there being any investigations of the very real crimes and impeachable offenses, frankly, of this administration. And a lot of this stuff is being done by people who were there long before George Bush came along. I mean, the guys working out of Orrin Hatch's office, hacking into Ted Kennedy's computer back in 2002 so they could figure out what the Democratic strategy was going to be to try and block the appointment, the confirmation of right-wing extremist judges, for example. They were hacked into Democrats' computers in the Senate for over a year and pulling information out and feeding it to the Washington Times and other right-wing sources just in time to sabotage the strategies of the Democrats, the same people who are spying on you and me without a warrant. I am so concerned about these guys that if at least one branch of the if the House or Senate isn't taken, and frankly, the Democrats in place held, even those with whom I have a lot of disagreements, then I think we're in big trouble. I really think we're in big trouble. I mean, yes, there are some Democrats out there that, what can I say? I mean, for example, Maria Cantwell, I disagree with her about some of her votes, particularly on the so-called free trade. And if I lived in Washington State, I would vote for it in a heartbeat because we need a Democrat in the Senate. Christine Gregoire, the governor, she's not running for re-election here, but, I mean, it's the same kind of thing. I mean, their office contacted us and said, hey, do you want to have the governor on? She's at the DLC event. And David's response, our producer, was, you don't want her to go on and talk to Tom about the DLC because he will not be nice to her. I mean, not be nice to her, but it would not be the kind of conversation you want to have happen. So I thought afterwards, I really should make it clear that outside of that, I think Christine Gregoire is a pretty decent person, a very good governor for the state of Washington. So I call up her press office and, now, hi, this is Tom Hartman, and I just want to let you know the reason why we didn't put the governor on the air today is because I just thought it would really be a bad thing. It wouldn't have worked out. I'll have a discussion about the DLC with anybody who wants to come on, but they have to know in advance what my position is. Because I'm just not going to blindside somebody. Even right-wingers, I'm not going to blindside. It's just not fair. It might make good theatrical radio or something. But so anyhow, I called up the press office, and they're like, yeah, okay, thanks. Click. I mean, I'm sitting here feeling like majorly dissed, you know. But so what? Right? Get over it. Come on, grow up. Be a big boy, right? Ultimately, right now, it's about if there isn't somebody in power to stand up to the Republicans, this republic, this nation is toast. And so whether we have a personal problem, you know, personal, you know, irritations with the staffs of particular politicians, or whether we have policy differences with particular Democratic politicians, we need to, and frankly, I'm saying this as somebody who is not registered as a Democrat. I'm registered as an independent. In the year 2000, I voted for Ralph Nader for president of the United States. Now, I did it knowing that I was living in Vermont and there was no chance that Nader was going to carry Vermont. And I just wanted, you know, his party to get that 5% so that they'd qualify for money in the future. I thought, yeah, I'm a big supporter of the Green Party. And right now, because we have a two-party system in the United States, even those of us who consider ourselves more progressive than the mainstream Democratic Party need to be out there supporting and, frankly, infiltrating and taking over the Democratic Party, because it really is the only party that can stand up to the Republicans right now at the national level. And that means calling your local Democratic Party and saying, how can I help? And you don't have to walk away from the Green Party in order to do that, or the Progressive Party, or whatever other form of politics you want to be participating in. Or going to the website of these folks and saying, here's $25. Or supporting independent organizations that by and large are supporting Democratic candidates, like democracyforamerica.com, Jim Dean's organization. They're doing great work. Two years in a row, I spoke at their conference here in Oregon, the democracyfororegon.com folks. Or the DFO.com. It's probably both. Every state has one of these organizations. There's an absolute 50-state strategy out there. We need to get out there, and we need to get active. Because the 60-some-odd days, I mean, you heard the hysteria in Sean Hannity's voice yesterday. You know, he's willing to die. He's willing to die to prevent Nancy Pelosi from becoming the Speaker of the House. Or he's willing for somebody to die. These are serious times. The Republicans are running scared. We should be, frankly, too. And holding a vision of restoring democracy to the United States and saying, no, Franklin Roosevelt was a good guy, and what he did was right, and he did save capitalism from itself, and he did bring greatness to this country, no matter what Limbaugh says.
Roosevelt is dead. His policies may live on, but we're in the process of doing something about that as well.
Yeah, and we're going to pull that out of your mouth and stomp on it, Mr. Limbaugh. I'm telling you, the American people are not on the side of the hardcore right-wingers. And their control of Congress is not going to stand. And the only way, ultimately, over the next 2, 4, 6 years that they're going to be able to hold it is by means that are way beyond legal. I mean, right now it's illegal, many of the things that they're doing. We're talking way beyond legal. We're talking about coup d'etat in America. And I don't want to see it go that far. And I really believe we can stop it if we can get Democrats elected, enough Democrats elected to the House and Senate this time, that we can provide a strong counterweight to the crimes of the Bush administration and the Republicans in Congress. Christine in Edmond, Washington. Hey, Christine.
Hello.
Hi. What's up?
I just wanted to read you a stunning headline that's in the Washington Post today.
Okay.
It says, Pentagon moves towards monitoring media.
Oh, is this the $20 million thing that they're putting out for bid?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking, in fact, I was talking with David about this this morning. Maybe we ought to, you know, submit a bid. We'll take $20 for reading the media.
Oh, there you go.
we could all do it collectively, all of our listeners. You know, everybody would end up with $20.
But it just amazed me that this doesn't create outrage on people. It's like, okay, so they're monitoring the media. What are they planning on doing with that information?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
where do they go with it?
Yep. This is Cliff Kincaid on steroids. You know, the guy who does accuracy in media.
Yep.
the right winger who's all over the talk shows and whatnot. Yeah, no, it's sick, twisted, and weird. And yes, it is outrageous. It is absolutely outrageous, Christine. And again, I suspect that most Americans are just going to go, they're just going to sleep through it.
They're on something else than sleeping through it, because this is totally against freedom of the press.
I agree with you, Christine. Thank you very much. And I'll tell you what they're on. What they're on is the Bush economic policies forcing them to work 50, 60, 70, 80 hours a week, two people in a household, in order to maintain a reasonable standard of living as we look into the jaws of a recession. They're just too busy to get active. 45 minutes past the hour.
The only thing that changes is my mind. I never cut to the mark, and I never could walk the line. Some things don't come easy. Love and should be free. I'd gladly give my heart to you, but the rest belongs to me. I don't mean to be a waste of time. Never could toe the mark, and I never could walk the line.
Yeah, toeing that mark, walking that line, it's a challenge. Welcome back, my friends. 1-866-440-THOM, our telephone number. Craig in Charlottesville, Virginia, listening on WXAX. Hey, Craig, what's up?
That's WXVAX, rather.
WVAX. Oh, okay. Thank you very much. I've got it wrong on my website. I'll have to fix it.
Glad to have you in Charlottesville.
Oh, we're pleased to be there.
I have a bee in my bonnet, so to speak, about I want to know what's going on with this no-confidence vote that's being proposed in the Senate against Rumsfeld. Where is this going?
In all probability, nowhere.
That's what I thought.
I don't think the Republicans are going to let this thing onto the floor.
And even let's say, for the sake of argument, that they did, and that somehow they got enough support from the right to persuade, cajole, or push Bush up against the wall, and he did drop Rummy. Well, by his past actions, he has proven that he will take someone even worse and stick him in that position.
Yeah, well, there is that. I mean, that was the argument against impeaching Bush, is that you're going to end up with Cheney as president. That's why. But that's why I'm of the opinion that we need to impeach both of them.
Yes,
they are both
exactly.
Equally guilty of all these crimes. And then people say, well, then you'll have Denny Hastert. No, you won't, because you're not going to get an impeachment when Denny Hastert, when the Republicans control the House.
Right.
It'll be when the Democrats control the House, and that means you're going to get Nancy Pelosi. And that's why Sean Hannity is talking about killing people to prevent that from happening, because, Nancy Pelosi president. I mean, it's just more than these guys can handle.
This is a watershed election coming up.
It really is. It really truly is.
The fate of our nation really hangs on it.
Yep. And just voting is not enough.
Nope.
It is not enough. If you're thinking of going out to lunch this afternoon, you're going to spend $25-$30 for lunch and drinks. Send that money instead to a Democratic politician who needs
Jim
it.
Jim Webb here in Virginia.
Yeah, there you go. For example, who's taking on Mr. Mikaka.
Yeah.
And all across the country. I mean, there are good Democratic politicians and even some Democratic politicians that, we may not agree with on all the issues. Still, we need to have a Democratic majority. Once we have a Democratic majority in the House and Senate, then we can sit down and say, how can we influence them to become more progressive? But right now, first things first, we've got a bunch of crazed fascists trying to run this country.
Yeah.
Well, actually trying to destroy this country, because they don't believe in government. That's
why they're
trying to run this country.
Once we do have a Democratic majority and things start to change, the neocons are going to use every weapon in their arsenal, all the media they can, blitzing against it.
Yeah. And
it's going to be an uphill battle.
Right, which brings us back to another part of the problem, which is the media itself. And again, hopefully, if we can get Democrats elected and Democrats and the struggle within the Democratic Party for the heart and soul of the Democratic Party, which frankly is going on right now between the DLC Democrats on the one hand and the Howard Dean old-fashioned capital D Democrats on the other hand.
Mm-hmm.
If the real Democrats can take over, then we can see perhaps a rollback of stuff like Clinton's Telecommunications Act in 96 or Reagan setting aside the Fairness Doctrine in 87, or at least some parts of it. I'm not sure I'd want the entire old-fashioned Fairness Doctrine. I was on the radio back in the late 60s, early 70s under the Fairness Doctrine, and this kind of conversation could not have happened on the radio.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, there were parts of the Fairness Doctrine I think are really important, like the idea that radio stations have to have real news. Actually produce real news. I mean, what a novel idea.
Yeah,
that's as Thomas Jefferson
these days.
days.
Yeah, you know, Jefferson went on and on about, you know, he said, if I had a choice of living in a society with newspapers and no government, or government and no newspapers, I'd certainly choose the former, you know, newspapers and no government. And now, what do we have? We don't have newspapers. We have large corporations who provide printed material for, you know, infotainment for us.
Well,
and it's so anyway,
we all must do our part, and beyond that, it's in God's hands.
There you go. Craig, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Yeah. Hope for the best. Pray for the best, and work as if the worst is going to happen. You know, plan for the worst and work for the best. Margaret in Everett, Wisconsin, or Washington, excuse me. Zach in Milwaukee, Wisconsin is next. Margaret, what's up?
Yes, Tom. Something that went into effect yesterday that I haven't heard anything about, and I don't think that the media will put it out, is the new law that is in effect now that the IRS has a bunch of strong-arm like bouncers, that's what I identified them as, going to collect on people's income tax that are unpaid.
Yeah, they've privatized this, and they're mm-hmm. turning over to private collection agencies, three big contractors to begin with.
Well,
anybody who owes $25,000 or less. If you're rich, you don't have to worry about these folks calling in the middle of the night. But if you're an average working stiff and you owe the IRS money, good luck.
Well, the only thing is they are not just targeting that. Now, for instance, I'm the recipient of one of these, and I had some experience with it because I got a notice that I owed $2,300 more on my tax because it was filed improperly. When I confronted the IRS with this, telling them no uncertain terms, I didn't, and you won't get this money, they told me to hold, and they turned me over to somebody who strong-armed me on the phone. So what I did was write a letter and send a copy of my tax forms in, and I would not take no for an answer. I kept on the phone asking for a supervisor until I got one, and what had actually happened, and I already knew the minute I looked at my form from this, but I know how to do taxes, and the average person is not going to know. They're going to start handing that money out. They had put my tax-exempt money in with my taxable money and punched it in that way, illegally.
Yep, and God forbid they should hand that off to some private corporation who now has all of your information and decides to harass you for the rest of your life because their 30% depends on it. And the more they spend chasing you down, the more invested in you they are and the harder they're going to try. And this is just wrong. It's just wrong. It's mostly wrong because it actually is costing you and me, the taxpayers, more to have the private corporations doing the collection than to have the government do the collection. It's incredible. What's Bush up to with fascism? That after this. 57 minutes past
the hour. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. In the Darwinian world of ideas, we're at the top of the food chain here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, and pleased to have you with us. George W. Bush, in his interview with Brian Williams. Brian Williams, the guy who says he listens to Rush Limbaugh every day because it's his duty as an American. Brian Williams asking George W. Bush about the war in Iraq.
When you take a tour of the world, a lot of Americans email me with their fears that, you know, some days they wake up and it just feels to them like the end of the world is near, and you go from North Korea to Iran to Iraq to Afghanistan, and you look at how things have changed, how Americans are viewed overseas, mm-hmm. if that is important to you. Do you have any moments of doubt that we fought the wrong war, that there's something wrong with the perception of America overseas?
Well, those are two different questions. Did we fight the wrong war? And absolutely, I have no doubt. The war came to our shores. Remember that. We had a foreign policy that basically said, let's hope calm works. and we were attacked.
But those weren't Iraqis.
No, I agree. They weren't Iraqis, nor did I ever say that Iraq ordered that attack. But they're part of, Iraq is part of the struggle against the terrorists. And these terrorists have made it clear they want us to leave Iraq.
No, it's number one, Iraq is part of the struggle against the terrorists. No, Iraq was sitting there minding its own damn business. I mean, about as far as it got was Saddam Hussein would send a $20,000 check to the families of suicide bombers in Israel, which is reprehensible. But it's nothing compared to the amount of money that was going out of Saudi Arabia for suicide bombers and Wahhabists and radical extremists in the Palestinian territories and in Israel. I mean, and by the way, who were the what country were the people who were flying the planes, at least according to the official story? 14 of the 18 of them, or 19 of them, last I checked, were Saudis. Not a single Iraqi on any of those planes. So, number one. And number two, Bush says, oh, these are terrorists trying to kick us out of Iraq. No, they're Iraqis trying to kick us out of Iraq. That's why they're referred to as insurgents. They're standing up and they're saying, we don't want our country occupied, thank you very much. Bush continues with his lies.
Prematurely, and why is it? Because they want a safe haven.
Oh, here we get into what Sigmund Freud referred to as projection. This is where you take your own motives, your own behaviors, and you project them onto other people. You assume that other people are doing what you would be doing. George W. Bush.
Now, these terrorists have made it clear they want us to leave Iraq prematurely. And why is it? Because they want a safe haven. They'd love to get a hold of oil. They have territorial ambitions. And I think fighting this war is the absolute right thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So they want a safe haven. It's called their country. Of course they want a safe haven. They want to live in their own damn country. But Bush would like a safe haven. They want the oil. Well, yeah, it's their oil. It's their country. And they're looking at us and say, why won't you let us have our oil? And they have territorial ambitions. Yeah, I think they'd like to keep their territory, thank you very much. Why is it that the U.S. Embassy, 22 buildings, 107 or 109 square acres, being built inside the green zone on the border of the Euphrates River, is the most valuable land in the entire country of Iraq, given to us as a gift by the government that we helped install, being built without Iraqi labor? The only project that is on time and on budget. The Iraqis looking at this going, there's something really wrong here. There's something really wrong here. Bush continues, Brian Williams actually first.
Do you see the argument that some on the left make that the war in Iraq has amounted?
Some on the left make? See, again, this is the kind of question that you get out of somebody who thinks that listening to Rush Limbaugh is your duty as an American citizen. But some on the left make. Come on, you got generals on the right making this. There is the left. There is no left in America. There's the radical middle. I'm sorry, the left in America, the communist, the old line communists and the old Marxists and Marxist socialists, they're gone. I'm saying there's a few of them still around, and you know they're fighting the good fight. But by and large, there's no left in America. There's the center. The vast majority of Americans want some very simple things: a clean environment, a country that is not destroying the biosphere by producing global warming. They want social security that is safe. They want the protection of a union in the workplace so that they can have some democracy in the workplace. They want to know that that they have a pension and that they have security in their old age. They want national health insurance. Fundamental things. 70, 80, 90% of Americans will consistently tell you that's what they want. That's not the left. That's us. That's America. Brian Williams should have said, Americans say, or some in the military say, but some on the left? Come on.
Do you see the argument that some on the left make that the war in Iraq has amounted to a colossal recruitment poster in the fundamentalist world?
No, I don't see that at all. The fundamentalist world attacked the United States and killed 3,000 people
It wasn't the fundamentalist world. It, you know, if the official story is right, it was Osama bin Laden. It was this one guy who wants to be the reincarnation of Salah, and he wants to be a big deal, just like Tim McVeigh wanted to be a big deal. He wanted all the right-wing Christian nationalists behind us, behind him. He thought, you know, we'll get them all together, and we'll take over this country. He, you know, McVeigh had read the book The Turner Diaries, in which the good right-wing Protestant, white Catholic, non-Catholic Christians bombed a federal building, and the government so overreacted by clamping down on and doing away with constitutional protections and creating Guantanamo Bay concentration camps and putting people in them that Americans stood up and said, we're not going to take this. I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And the Americans stood up and fought back, at least the good white gun-owning Protestant Americans did. And in the process, they killed all the African Americans. They killed the Jews. They killed the Asian Americans. They killed the Catholics. And all that was left was the good, God-fearing white American Protestants and their admiring women. And maybe a few Mormons. I don't know. That was it in the book The Turner Diaries that Tim McVeigh read and took to heart. And he thought on the anniversary of Waco that that would be the perfect day to start the revolution in America. Osama bin Laden wanted to do the same thing, wanted to be a big shot. And which is exactly what he got. George Bush gave him exactly what he wanted. He wanted to get away. He wanted to get out of Afghanistan. Bush let him out of Afghanistan. He wanted to live in Pakistan. He's living right. He wanted to be safe. He's safe. Here we are, 5 years on. Osama bin Laden has gotten everything he wants. And frankly, I would say so has George Bush. Coincidence or conspiracy? I'll leave that up to you.
Before I even thought about removing Saddam Hussein from power.
Oh, they attacked us before you even thought about it. And you were thinking about it in 99. You were thinking about it, telling your biographer, Mickey Herskowitz, about it. You're according to your Treasury Secretary, Paul O'Neill, your very first cabinet meeting in January of 2001, you were talking about it. See how the facility, how facile his lies are. This guy, I mean, he just comes up with this stuff. I mean, just, you know, just so easy. He knew Karl Rove and Richard Armitage were involved in the leak.
And I don't know if we're going to find out. The senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration. And there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Yeah, or the plane. You know, we all know the first plane was not shown on TV. Nobody saw the first plane hit. Here's Bush.
Well, Jordan, you're not going to believe what state I was in when I heard about the terrorist attack.
Because, by the way, the first plane was filmed by some Spanish or French tourists across the street. The tape didn't come out until the next day. What we all saw was the second plane hit.
Well, Jordan, you're not going to believe what state I was in when I heard about the terrorist attack. I was in Florida. And my chief of staff, Andy Card, well, actually, I was in a classroom talking about a reading program that works. And I was sitting outside the classroom.
He's just making this up, making it up.
And I saw an airplane hit the tower of a TV. You know, the TV was obviously on. And
well, obviously.
I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot. And it said it must have been a horrible accident. But I was whisked off there. I didn't have much time to think about it. And I was sitting in the classroom, and Andy Card, my chief of staff, was sitting over here, walked in and said, a second plane has hit the tower. America's under attack.
Yeah. Andy Card comes in and says, there's been a second plane. And he saw the first one. Nobody else saw the first one. None of us saw the first one. It just comes out so easily for him. And we're supposed to believe this guy. We're supposed to have this guy as our president. I don't buy it. 16 minutes past the hour. My friends, 21 minutes past the hour on this first day of September. I guess it's Boy, we're coming into fall here, aren't we? Summer went back so by so fast, I almost, you know, it almost seems like it was just very recently.
And now it's springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Yes, spring is past.
Deutschland is happy and gay.
Yes.
We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race.
Yeah, if you have any doubts, just ask George Allen or Pat Buchanan. I mean, they'll be glad to tell you all about it. So anyhow, with George W. Bush continuing with his little riff here. And, hang on just a moment. There we go.
By that argument. It is an argument that's not based upon fact.
But it's that tie. It's the story in the paper recently of the kid who joined the National Guard, angry about what they did to us on 9/11. Thought he was going to Afghanistan. Killed in Iraq.
Brian, all I can tell you is that we have a volunteer army full of motivated, decent, honorable citizens wearing our uniform, and morale is high.
Lie.
Morale is really high. You talk
Lie.
To the families and you talk to these kids who are fighting for this country. They understand the stakes, and they're proud to be doing it. And this country owes them a debt of gratitude.
And how many of them are going to stand up to the President of the United States and say, sir, you lied us into a war, and we're just, like, really kind of over it? No, I don't think it's going to happen. Let's check out what the status is of the U.S. occupation in Iraq.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lights in the balance.
Following our security and other developments in Iraq, reported as of Friday at 0900 GMT by Reuters. Dateline Kirkuk, a roadside bomb targeting a police patrol exploded in central Kirkuk, wounding three policemen. Near Dujail, a senior Iraqi intelligence officer during Saddam Hussein's rule was found dead with gunshot wounds to his head and his hands bound behind his back near his home in northern Baghdad the day after he was kidnapped. Second former senior Saddam Hussein regime official killed in as many days. Dateline Baghdad roadside bomb killed three Iraqi policemen in Baghdad's southern Dura district. And in Numania, gunmen killed a police after storming his house Thursday night in that village 120 kilometers north of Baghdad. Sad news. Sad news. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Ann in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Ann.
Hi. A few months ago, Bush really slipped up. That regime, the White House, uses something called the Kuleshov effect, and they use it all the time. It's probably called something else today. But Kuleshov was a Soviet filmmaker, a propagandist, and he discovered that when you take two images and put them together side by side, people will infer that there's a connection between the two.
Yeah, these are, and by the way, this is something that first made its way big time into American politics with the Willie Horton ads under Bush Sr., where they'd show Willie Horton and they show Michael Dukakis, and they show Willie Horton and they show Michael Dukakis, and they back and forth and back and forth.
And it's very clever because it's indirect. It has to be indirect. It has to be implicit. Because if you actually state it, you can be challenged, and then there can be a debate, and people are alerted to put on their thinking cap.
Yep.
So a few months ago, he was talking to a reporter, and the reporter said, "But sir, you made this connection between Hussein, between Iraq and 9/11." And he said, "Well, I never made a direct connection."
Right. Right. And in fact, actually, you know, earlier in one of his press conferences, he said,
"We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th."
No. We've had no evidence. Now, this is from a year and a half ago. And again, more than 50% of the American people think that Saddam Hussein had something to do with or directly ordered 9/11.
I don't understand why they do that when, you know, they, like, look at you blankly when you prove that it's not true.
Yeah.
And they can't seem to absorb it. It's like the time Palestinian Arabs had gone into the church of the Nativity. And I remember Carville saying to this Arab spokesman, you know, I know all these Christian friends of mine back home, and they're really offended by that. And this fellow tried to tell them, but it's their church. They're Christian. They're Christians.
Christian
they're
Arabs.
Christian Arabs.
Yeah, like Tariq Aziz was, by the way, the official spokesman for Saddam Hussein. He was a Christian
right.
Arab.
And, but people don't recognize
that. But Saddam was a Muslim extremist, and he had no toleration for... Saddam was a secularist. And in fact, it was just in the last few months that he started bowing down to Mecca because he was concerned about his image. Anne, thank you for the call. Good point you make. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And thanks for listening to us there in Eugene on KOPT. 27 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least a clean election. We'd really settle for that.
Ooh. It never makes no sense. It never makes no sense. Fire, fire, fire. Light up your lighter. Fire, fire, fire. Armageddon is a deadly day. Armageddon is a deadly way. They're coming for you every day. Senators on a holiday, the army recruiters in the parking lot, hustling the kids, they're juggling pot. Listen, young man, listen to my plan. Gonna make you money, gonna make you a man.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You might come home with one less leg, but this thing will surely keep a bullet at your chest. So come on, come on, sign up.
I'm not making this up.
This one's nothing like Vietnam, except for the bullet, except for the bomb.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
And welcome back. 35 minutes past the hour. Your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Oh, man. It is, you get it. Warren Jeffs was arrested this week, right? I believe his name is Warren Jeffs, the guy who's the head of this polygamous Mormon sect. And you get it that these guys are not powerful men. I mean, they may wield power. But inside their own minds, inside their own skin, they are not powerful men. They are terrified men. They are pathetic, terrified men. And I say men quite advisedly because this is something that is far more a male phenomenon than a female one. And the way that they try to compensate for their own terror, their own insecurity, their own fear, is by seizing power. They have this mindset, this weird notion that if they can just get enough power, they can control things and all of that out of control stuff in their lives, like in George W. Bush's case, for example, his older sister dying when he was 7 years old, his parents never talking about it, going golfing the next day, that kind of stuff, the horrible things that happen will just stop happening. If I could just get control of enough things, if we could just control it all, then everything will be okay. And the unfortunate reality is that we can never control everything in our lives. Stuff happens. To paraphrase in a way that I can do on radio, the old bumper sticker. People get sick. People get diseases. People die. People have accidents. 50,000 people a year die in the United States in car accidents. What, are we going to call cars terrorists and outlaw them? 500,000 people a year die in the United States from smoking cigarettes. What should we really be afraid of? Well, Bush wants to make sure that we're afraid of what he wants us to be afraid of so that he can speak. He, this frankly pathetic, frightened man, can speak to the fear in other men, in particular men, although some women as well, so that he can speak to the fear in others, and he can instill his own particular variety of fear in them so that he can then manipulate their behavior. And thus, for example, before the Republican National Convention, the RNC, Bush gets up in front of the RNC and gives a speech from which these clips are taken in order.
Be afraid, September the 11th. We saw tragedy arrive on a quiet morning. The evil terrorists, danger, doomed killers. Be afraid. The world will drift toward tragedy. May God bless you. Evil God. Iraq, darkness. The continuing danger of terrorism. Be afraid. We have fought the terrorists across the earth. Evil. We are staying on the offensive, striking terrorists abroad, and nothing will hold us back. And we will prevail. Be afraid. God bless America. Nuclear weapons. Iraq was a gathering threat, and Al-Qaeda was largely unchallenged as it planned attacks. Free Afghanistan, terror. Pakistan, terrorists. Saudi Arabia, Libya, weapons programs. Saddam Hussein, terror. Weapons of mass destruction. The Almighty God, the dictator. Afghanistan, terrorists of Afghanistan and Iraq. Fight terrorists. Various terrorist enemies we are facing in Iraq. We are defeating the terrorists. Doing battle in Afghanistan and Iraq. The resurrection, Saddam Hussein's secret police, sadistic punishment, mass graves, radical ideology of hate, kill the innocent, tyranny and terror.
And, you know, I'm sure Sigmund Freud would go farther than that. I'm really not going to get into much more psychobabble on this thing other than to say that the use of fear, the use of terror to control people is an old strategy that has been used for a long, long time and has been fine-tuned with the development of electronic media. World War I was the first war that was sold to the American people. Woodrow Wilson, the Democrat, essentially inventing, bringing about, he didn't invent it, but bringing forward the public relations industry, which led to the creation of modern PR and advertising techniques in order to sell a war. And ever since then, this medium has been used, and the reinventions of it, television, the internet, to promote fear. And there comes a time. I mean, there comes a very serious, very real time when we as citizens, when we as Americans, when we as human beings have to acknowledge that fear is not the thing that we're going to allow to motivate us.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
And enough. We're not going to be afraid. We're not even going to be afraid of being afraid. Because we've been down that road. We've seen that play. We've seen that movie. And it's not a good one. It's not a healthy one. And we're just not going to do it. Thank you very much. And we need to start standing up to these guys and saying, I'm sorry, I'm not afraid. They don't hate us. They hate our foreign policy. And we need to change it. It doesn't mean appeasing people. It means doing what's right. Because when you do what's wrong, sometimes you get blowback from it. It's really a fairly simple, straightforward, step-by-step issue. 1-866-440-8466. Our telephone number, Stephen in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Stephen.
Yeah, that's great, Tom. Don't be afraid. I'm going to have to capture the quote from the movie Home Alone. Macaulay Culkin says, oh, you hear me? I'm not afraid anymore.
There you go.
That's great. But it's true. I mean, this is how they're trying to control us. But
it's all they have to sell. All they have to sell. They don't have a thing to sell that the American people want to buy. The American people don't want to buy private savings accounts instead of national health insurance. We don't want to buy the end of Social Security. We don't want to buy dirtier air, dirtier water, fewer forests. All the stuff that they have to sell, we don't want to buy. So they're going to try and sell us fear.
Yeah, they treat us like they're herding sheep or cattle or something. But, I just wanted to make a point about what George Bush said he was doing on the morning, September 11th.
Right.
And I thought maybe, you know, he is a huge liar, and every other time you call him a liar, it's probably true. But I think maybe that was just a grammatical error where he meant, if he weren't, you know, just such a poor communicator, he might have said, I saw that an airplane had hit the tower, instead of, I saw an airplane hit the tower. You know what I mean?
Yeah, except that when you look at the timeline, though, He was notified before he went into the classroom that a plane had hit one of the Twin Towers. There were no televisions in that school that were turned on at that point in time. He did not see that. I mean, there's all kinds of witnesses, people who were there, teachers who were there, the principal. He didn't see it. He just made it up on the fly. I know there are some people who say, oh, yeah, he did see it. He was watching on a secret CIA handy cam because they were watching themselves execute the crime of the century. But the folks who were there kind of
don't you think that he might have been waiting to go into his photo op, and somebody said, hey, whoa, look at this, there's smoke coming out of one of the towers, apparently a plane hit it. That's how I found out, and that's the first thing that I saw. And if somebody had asked me about it, I would have said, yeah, I saw on TV that an airplane had hit the tower, and he just left out the word had.
Oh, I see.
Or
what you're
he left out the word that an airplane had.
I suppose that's conceivable. I suppose that's and in other words, we should give him the benefit of the doubt. We should cut him a little slack here.
I hate to stick up for that jerk, but hey, you know, I think we're liberals and we can admit maybe if we might be wrong, whereas you know your right wing cranks can't.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Well, it's a possibility. I'll give you that. Thank you,
Steven. Take it easy, Tom. I love you, bud.
Good to hear from you. Thank you so much for the call, Chris in Salinas, California. Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I knew you were going to say that. I'm concerned on how they're twisting the fascists, turning it around on the liberals and progressives, and what we can do about this. You don't hear anybody. I mean, you do on shows like yours and on progressive radio, but you don't see it in the newspapers. You don't see it on the TV. Of anybody saying, "Hey, this is corporatism. Fascism's corporatism, not
right."
Not
we need to be pushing back. And I wrote an op-ed about this in Common Dreams, which is still up on their website, commondreams.org.
Yeah, I got that.
And that, I mean, you just forward it to as many people as you can. Share the word as widely as you can. And when you hear media use Islamofascism or any incorrectly using the word fascism, whenever you hear it happen, call that media, call that local radio station, TV station, network, if you see it in the newspaper, call the editor and say, hey, wait a minute, you're incorrectly using this term. And if we can get enough reporters to push back on the Bush administration, we can take back the word fascism. Because what's happening is that fascists are using the word fascism, so we can't correctly identify them as fascists. 45 minutes past the hour.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
It's my dad's favorite song. I dedicate it to you.
I see skies of blue. Clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
A special thanks to my producer David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Andrew Dunn and Lauren Kirchner at Air America Radio, to Ben and Shelby at White Rose Society at RadioPower.org, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Thanks so much. You all make it possible. Tom Hartman radio program here, where being progressive never felt so good. 9 minutes before the hour, 1-866-440-8466. And Brad in Redmond, Washington, it says here you disagree with me, so I'll take your call first. What's up?
Yeah, well, I actually one of the reasons I've listened to your show is because I agree with you on most issues, but I frequently disagree with you on the details. And one of the things that you've been arguing is about how the Taliban was willing to give us Osama bin Laden before the Afghanistan war. And their criteria for doing that were that we had to essentially prove to them that Osama bin Laden was directly responsible. And the fact is, he wasn't directly responsible. There's a lot of evidence that he guided the people, but there was no operational connection that we could prove at that time. So if we
actually, let me correct your correction. They did not offer to give him to us. They offered to give him to a third party.
Yes, that is true.
And they were not asking for the evidence from us. They simply offered to give him to a third party. I have the Washington Post article right here in my hands. You can read it. Monday, October 29, 2001. You can go back and track it down. And it's very straightforward. In interviews, U.S. participants and sources close to the Taliban discussed the exchanges in detail and debated whether the State Department should have been more flexible in its hardline stance. Earlier this month, President Bush summarily rejected another Taliban offer to give up bin Laden to a neutral third country. Period. End of sentence. It wasn't a negotiation. It was an offer. They said, we'll give him up. Don't bomb us.
I think if you look at the earlier offer, you'll find that it did in fact say that if you can show us evidence that he is responsible, we'll give him up.
That was their starting position, yeah. That was their starting position. But
they did revise that position.
Oh, yeah, several times. When it got down to the point where it was pretty obvious to them that we were going to start bombing Afghanistan, they were like, take him, take him. The same thing with Saddam Hussein. You know, the last week before we bombed Iraq, Saddam Hussein was saying, oh, I'll never negotiate oil denominate oil into euros. Don't worry. We're going to do away with that idea of a bourse. We'll keep in dollars. I mean, he was like, we'll give you anything. Just don't bomb us.
Hmm. All right, that doesn't match what I was hearing at the time, but I may have missed this particular exchange.
October 29, 2001, Washington Post.
I'll look it up. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks a lot for the call. 1-866-440-8466. Roy at Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Hey, Roy.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hey.
I thought I'd throw a little wrinkle. We've got a dust up here in Albuquerque. We have a fellow by the name of Mikey Weinstein who has the military freedom from religion group, and there is a group over at Clovis at the Air Force base over there, a squadron of Air Force planes, and they are called the Crusaders.
Uh-oh.
And their patch includes a sword, a Middle Ages iron helmet, you know, with the eye guards and the flapper,
right,
and things,
yep,
and a cross. And Mikey Weinstein is saying, hey, folks, this is the 21st century. We should get rid of that patch and that name. We're national.
Yeah.
We're international.
Yeah, it doesn't look good when it shows up on Al Jazeera.
And our local, you know, our local Rush wannabe was sitting there and went off this morning. And this is as close to a quote as I could get with him. He feels that if the religious Christian wackos at the Air Force Academy want to promote their religion, if you don't like it, don't go to the Air Force Academy.
Oh, man. See,
bizarre is this?
Yeah, all the more the tragedy, and particularly for those of us who consider ourselves Christians and are concerned about the future of Christianity because it's being taken over. It's being hijacked by these, as you characterize, these right-wing wackos. I mean, it's worse than that, frankly, because they are not Christians, and I... You know, just a cursory reading of the New Testament would cause you to think that Jesus would turn his back on them.
And
he'd be flipping over their tables.
You know, and it goes back to the fascists as far as using their weaknesses, you know, trying to reverse the weaknesses, going out and calling everybody else fascist because they look in the mirror in the morning and see themselves as fascists.
Yeah, yeah.
Patrick McGrid's campaign has been doing a terrific job with Heather Wilson's campaign of turning her – she's so-called independent, and they have turned
Heather Wilson is the
around.
Republican, is she not?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And she's one of the Bush deniers now. She's independent. And they have been doing a terrific job of that's independence and
yeah,
just flashing her voting record and telling, you know, it's the old.
Well, see, this is the thing.
Tell the truth and they think they're giving them hell.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's I don't give them hell. I just tell the truth and they think it is. And you'll recall, Roy, I know you're a longtime listener to this program. A year ago, I was saying, you just wait
Everybody's
until the fall of 2006. All the Republicans are going to be running against Bush and he and Rove are going to help them do it. Because they, you know, they're very concerned that they don't want to go to prison.
That's right.
And he doesn't want to get impeached. Yeah.
Have
so,
a great weekend.
Thanks.
Everybody get out and do something this weekend. Get out, educate, motivate.
There you go, Roy. Educate, agitate, motivate. Well said. And don't forget, please don't forget, that democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. It all starts with you. Each one of us. We are the links in the chain that make up democracy. Bad metaphor, but we are what makes a democracy. Tag, you're it. See you next weekend, or next week. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.